This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. The proposed Atlantic Coast Pipeline would carry fracked natural gas from fields in West Virginia down through much of eastern North Carolina. It's a massive undertaking that's garnered both support and opposition. Now, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has weighed in with its own assessment of the project. They've determined that the project would incur some adverse effects, but says those risks can be mitigated. Here to talk about that report and the reaction from a range of stakeholders is Lauren Onasorge. She's a staff writer with the Triangle Business Journal and has been following the story. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you. So start us by reminding us a bit about this pipeline. We know it's 600 miles. It's been in the works since the fall of 2014. Where exactly is it going to run in North Carolina? How does North Carolina come into the story?
So it's part of a $5 billion project. It's a natural gas pipeline that's pumping fracked natural gas from West Virginia through Virginia and into North Carolina. It actually crosses into 8 counties in eastern North Carolina: Northampton, Halifax, Nash, Wilson, Johnston, Cumberland, Sampson, Robeson County. And as you may know, these are among the most economically depressed counties in the state. So that's one of the reasons they say that this project is so critical. They're hoping that by having more resilient natural gas access, economic developers are saying, well, we can then use this to recruit manufacturers. They can hire people. We can sort of improve the numbers on that end. So they're saying that there's a lot of at stake here.
So there are lots of stakeholders. We're going to talk about all of their comments and concerns in a second. But I want to talk first about the latest news, which is this environmental impact statement from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Tell us about the findings of that report.
Yes. So the final environmental impact statement was released just last week, and it concludes that while the project's construction and implementation is likely to result in, quote, some adverse effects, by following a lot of their recommendations, the report suggests that the pipeline can reduce those impacts to, again, to quote, less than significant levels. So in other words, there would be some impact, but it would be negligible compared to the impact of the project as a whole. So they're basically saying that on this front, the project could potentially move forward.
And what are some of these impacts that they list out?
All sorts of stuff. It's a pretty lengthy document. It includes impact on steep slopes, bodies of water. There are a handful of endangered species that could be impacted by the project, everything from a clubshell mussel to an Indiana bat. Dominion, which is one of the utility partners on the project, released a statement that this provides a clear path for their final approval of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. So there are still some permits that they need to get. They need to pass both federal and state water regulatory requirements, those kinds of things. But they are saying that this statement puts them in line to start construction in the fall.
So this pipeline is going through land of individuals. About 1,000 of the landowners impacted by the project are in North Carolina. Tell us a bit about what you're hearing from homeowners and landowners who live near where the pipeline would be constructed.
Sure. So you're right. Of the 2,900 landowners impacted by the project, 1,000 are in North Carolina. I've spoken to many of these people. Some are in favor of the project. They're hoping that their natural gas bills will go down as a result of this. A lot of other people are not excited about this project at all. They're afraid that it's going to dramatically decrease their property values. They have safety concerns. Obviously, the pipeline has been saying that this project is completely safe. Well, they counter to that, what's safer, having a pipeline in your backyard or not having a pipeline in your backyard? And in terms of reselling property, they're saying that it's challenging to sell a property and to sell it at a competitive price when you do have this pipeline in the back of your yard. What I don't think a lot of people realize is this is not exactly an eminent domain case. This is not a case of a utility completely taking over your land. You still own your land. You still pay property taxes on your land. This is easements. It's basically giving them permission to put this pipeline underneath your fields. Now, in a way, it's less impactful because if you're a farmer, for example, you can continue to have your livestock on your field. They're just going to be over this natural gas pipeline. But this does mean that you would not be able to build a house or a permanent structure there. There are some limitations that come with these easements.
So do residents feel like they are being listened to in this process? How much say have they had? How much say could they still have?
They're telling me the ones that are opposed to this project do not feel like their voices are being heard. Now, ACP does say that they've made more than 300 route adjustments based not only on environmental concerns, but also landowner concerns. They've made some what they consider to be pretty significant route adjustments. Some people that I've talked to are just very concerned. They say that they don't know who to talk to. They've gone to these public workshops. They're being handed really complicated paperwork that they don't understand. They're saying they're going through this with lawyers. And then there are other people that I have talked to who just recently learned about the project. While their homes may physically be closer to the pipeline than some of these other people, since the pipeline does not cross into their property, some of them were not notified. So when I was reaching out to landowners in May, I actually came across several people who were learning about the project and not incredibly pleased at its proximity to their houses.
So lots of confusion, some uncertainty. But on the other end, you have said there are a number of people who are excited. Economic developers say this is a great opportunity for Eastern North Carolina. It'll have access to cheaper energy. Companies could potentially tap directly into the pipeline. Seven mayors have come out in favor. Tell us what you're hearing from those stakeholders.
There is so much support for this project from economic developers. I have talked to economic developers who literally say this is critical. Secretary of Commerce Tony Copeland said last week that there are areas of North Carolina that are 40 miles from a natural gas pipeline. And natural gas is critical when it comes to these major manufacturing operations, which is exactly what these developers are trying to lure to the state. They point to these demographics, the same ones that we were talking about earlier, unemployment numbers, and they say that that's why these projects are so critical to the region. And without natural gas access, they just simply will go elsewhere. And obviously, there's a lot of competition for these jobs. Eastern North Carolina is not the only region that is seeking them out. So they're saying that this is absolutely critical. So I spoke with a developer this week who tells me that they are working on preliminary agreements for what are called tap outs. So right now, as it stands, the only entities that can directly access this natural gas are the utility companies. Now, they say they're working on some preliminary agreements that might allow for, say, a major manufacturer to come in and directly tap into that resource, but none of those agreements have been finalized, so that's all still being worked out.
All right, Lauren, we're going to have to stop you there. We're going to continue our conversation with another guest in studio, but Lauren Onosorge of the Triangle Business Journal, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Joining me now is Ryan Emanuel. He's a member of the Lumbee Tribe and a professor in the Department of Forestry and Environmental Resources at North Carolina State University. He recently published a letter in the journal Science about how he thinks Native communities are being overlooked by federal regulators. Ryan joins me now. Welcome.
Thanks, Anita.
So tell us a bit about the main argument in your letter.
So my letter really looks at the demographic analysis of populations living along this pipeline. I use the exact same data that federal regulators used in their analysis, but I pointed out flaws in their analysis that tended to mask disproportionate impacts on minority populations. And I showed that there really are significant disproportionate impacts on Native Americans in North Carolina.
So you say that, you know, while 13% of the people impacted by the pipeline are Native Americans, this population only makes up 1% of North Carolina's population. So you argue that's disproportionate.
Yes, and it's even disproportionate if you look at the counties involved. Native Americans make up a higher fraction of the population in those counties, but there it's only 6%.
So we've heard about some of the concerns of homeowners and landowners in general from Lauren. Can you talk about specific concerns for Native communities?
Yeah, I'm glad that Lauren summarized those economic and safety concerns. But Native communities have all of these same concerns, but they have unique cultural concerns as well that derive from our status as people that have lived in these lands for centuries. We're indigenous to these places. Many of these landscapes and waterways are sacred to us. Our ancestors have been buried here for generations, and this is part of our cultural identity. So these impacts, while we share the same safety and other economic impacts, these cultural impacts are things that we're really concerned about as well.
And how have Native communities been a part of the conversation so far?
They've been allowed to participate in the public comment portion of this discussion. They've not been engaged separately in the way that some tribes would be. For example, federally recognized tribes have to be consulted with by federal agencies on projects like this. One of the complications in this case is that the tribes along the pipeline are non-federal.
So I only have about 30 seconds left, but tell me a bit about what you were hoping for moving forward. What would it look like for the Lumbee and other Native communities to feel heard and included in this process?
Well, I hope that federal regulators will still take the opportunity to reach out directly to these communities before they issue their final decision later this year. And I would really like the tribes along the pipeline to have an opportunity to weigh in with their specific concerns and not have those concerns channeled through conversations with the developer.
Wonderful. Well, you can hear more about Ryan's concerns and his argument in his latest article. We have a link to that at our website, stateofthings.org. Ryan Emanuel is an enrolled member of the Lumbee Tribe and a professor in the Department of Forestry and Environmental Resources at North Carolina State University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we are going to talk with a photographer from the Outer Banks. He spent years documenting the region's landscape and culture, and we'll hear about the surfing culture out there. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.